Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers on the broadcast today. It's an all-pundit show from Carson City with Russell Rowe, Jesse Wadhams, and Annie McKay. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great show today. It's an all-power pundit show with Russell Rowe, the lobbyist, Jesse Wadhams of counsel with Fenimore Craig, and Andrew McKay, executive director of the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association. So, got to start with you first, Andy. Don Gibbons, taking your former job at the NTA, your thoughts?
I was somewhat surprised, to be honest. I didn't know if she had an interest in the position, but obviously Don has a breadth of experience in, you know, politically speaking, serving obviously when Congressman Gibbons went to the Gulf War, served in his place temporarily, and then obviously was duly elected and of course ran for Congress, but didn't make it there. I was surprised. I never thought that she would have even considered becoming a regulator, but
you know, it's interesting. You know, Bruce Breslau knew nothing about nuclear energy and then suddenly became in charge of the fight against Yucca Mountain. Within the weekend, he had learned everything on the planet about nuclear energy. And I worked with Dawn Gibbons on the autism bill during her husband's administration. She is somebody that really studies the issues, and so I think she'll do a good job with this. Let's talk about NPR filing the lawsuit against Heidi Gansert. And surprisingly, the person who fired back was Majority Leader Aaron Ford. Were you surprised at that?
You know, not entirely. I think overall, by and large, the Senate does like to protect itself. And I think you would have probably seen something from the other side had it been the other direction. But it's an interesting question because NPRI did this with Mo Dennis a few years back, and the court ultimately, I don't know if they fully came to a final decision, but Mo ended up resigning anyway. But again, the separation of powers, you have to actually exercise certain powers within the both sides, and you know, I'm not entirely sure that Senator Gansert's position does that.
Russell, do you think this is going anywhere? I'm going to have you come right up on that mic.
If I knew much about it, Sam, I would be able to tell you. I haven't even followed this one.
All right. Well, let's talk about minimum wage. Russell, obviously, this is going to be huge here at this session. Is it a question of which level we get to rather than yes or no?
I think it's a question of which level you potentially get to, and I think it's a question of the totality of the employment bills that are going to be introduced. I mean, there's a lot that's coming out. And I think from a business perspective, certainly you have to take it all into account before you can try to sit down and address a specific issue like minimum wage.
Okay, what other issues are coming up?
Oh, geez, paid sick leave.
An equal pay bill with probably some component of a private right of action. So there's, you know, and Russell hits the nail right on the head. You have kind of have to look at all of these things because all of them are taking from the same bucket, essentially from employers, from businesses. And so in totality, we'll have to see how all these pieces kind of fit together.
And there's also a question that's been raised of constitutionality because of minimum wage being in the Constitution. Can you make changes outside of having a constitutional amendment?
Well, and I think that that's a legitimate question. Now, of course, legislative counsel has opined in its opinion that this doesn't conflict slash run afoul with the Constitution. I think there's some very talented and learned labor attorneys that would disagree with that position. If this in any form or fashion were to end up in the governor's desk, and if he were to sign it, and again, I'm saying that extremely hypothetically, I think you're going to see litigation commence in some form or fashion.
Do you agree?
I tend to. I think, you know, there's some interesting questions as to whether or not the legislature can go above the floor that the Constitution sets. That's kind of the theory that the legislative lawyers are looking at. But then the legislature is also exempting certain employers like local and state governments. And so can you do that? Because the Constitution includes all employers and employees.
It's going to be a very interesting situation. Russell, you were very much involved with Tesla coming to the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center. Story in the Reno Gazette Journal this morning says that potential for them to build 1 million cars a year out of that gigafactory. Do you think that's a reasonable assumption?
I like to hear those kind of numbers. I think that's a fair assumption. I mean, they've added internally added levels within the gigafactory. Originally, it wasn't going to be multi-level. So there's certainly capacity in there. And obviously, with the announcement of producing and manufacturing the drivetrain, so to speak, that's not necessarily the proper term for it. But, I think there's real opportunities for Nevada, and particularly up here in northern Nevada, expand that gigafactory into other forms of manufacture.
I mean, it really will be quite astonishing. And Lance Gilman in Northern Nevada Business Weekly this week is talking about a third and possibly biggest hurrah coming to the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center. The deal that he's been talking about now for the last couple of years has been something that would be bigger than Tesla and Switch combined. Any thoughts on what that could be? And my hearing is that it's going to be announced the closing probably within about 6 to 8 weeks.
I can only speculate, Sam. We've been hearing that, I guess it was last fall, so 2015, and it was going to come out any day. My assumption is in working in the automotive realm, representing auto dealers, I don't see how could anything be but something along the lines of either an automotive manufacturing plant or maybe a heavy equipment plant. To say that it's bigger than Switch and particularly Tesla, I mean, Tesla, that's
combined.
That's going to be the biggest building in the world. So for it to be combined, and that Switch facility is enormous, I couldn't even fathom a guess. It's what's General Motors going to do? Relocate all their manufacturing facilities under one roof? I'm being facetious, but it would be scope and scale along those lines, I would think.
My understanding is it's 2,000 acres.
That would be an impressive facility. I've heard the same rumors. I think I was on a show with Mr. Gilman a while back. And so obviously the rumors have been out there a while. I hope and wish him the very best and that we get more. I think the Tahoe Regional Industrial Park has done great things for Northern Nevada. So I'm hoping that this continues that.
To say the least. Okay, let's take a break. More with our Power Pundit panel for the whole show right after this.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great show going here today with our Power Pundit panel for the whole show. Russell Rowe is here, Jesse Wadhams, and Andy McKay. Russell, one of the things that, you know, it's gotten coverage, but not nearly as much as you would think, which is that Caesars finally has gotten out of their bankruptcy. They've shed $10 billion of debt, which is unbelievable. They, prior to this, had the largest amount of debt, larger than the city of Detroit when they were in bankruptcy. What does this mean for Caesars going forward now?
Well, you know, given what they've done while they're going through bankruptcy, I think it's tremendously positive, certainly for Nevada and, of course, for Las Vegas. And if you recall, the Link was built right in the middle of that entire process, and they were really ahead of their competitors on the Strip in terms of building new amenities for younger millennials.
And they caught some grief from that, from former Senator Townsend on the Gaming Commission.
When they did a bit.
Something to the effect of, no more of Ferris wheels.
Right. Well, you know, but then, and then look what MGM went and did and built the park, right, which is essentially the Link with an arena at the end of it. So I'm looking forward to what Caesars will bring now that they've cleared themselves financially.
And what's also interesting is at the same time, Caesars is paying $44 million to leave Nevada Power. So yet another major gaming company getting off the grid.
That seems to be more of the rule now, not the exception of, and not only, you know, gaming properties, just big power purchase guys, you know, Switch is out, Wynn, MGM, Sands, you know, they're going to go to the open market, and they're penciling it out. The one thing that gamers are is they're great numbers guys, and they look at the long term, and clearly it's beneficial for them.
Beneficial for them, but what about for the public? I mean, energy is obviously going to be a huge issue. Assemblyman Chris Brooks is going to be here next week talking about his plan. He would like to see 80% renewables for Nevada. And we thought California was crazy looking at 50%.
Well, and I just saw, I think California has introduced a bill to go to 100% renewable. So this is clearly the trend. And I think, you know, you brought up a good point about the large power users moving off the grid. And, you know, full disclosure, we represent mining companies, which actually started back in the late 90s doing this. But the potential cost shift of stranded costs to the consumers and how ratepayers, particularly in Southern Nevada, with those large scale users leaving, I think is going to be a topic that's going to have to be discussed much more in depth by smarter people than me.
And do you think there's enough money, Andy, that's being put up by these various companies to provide security for the homeowners in Nevada, period?
Well, I think Jesse just nailed it. These folks that are working on this are a heck of a lot smarter than me. The reality is you have some extremely talented economists at the PUC, and they look through it. Obviously, there's a rulemaking docket that's put into place. Rulemaking isn't the right term, pardon that, but they deliberate and they go back and forth. I trust the PUC in this, quite frankly. They don't have a dog in the fight. And so when they come up with $47 million, whatever that number is, you got to rely on the experts there.
It's going to be interesting to see, because the PUC has already shifted on rooftop solar. Do you think that industry is going to come back the way it was before with net metering?
I think it remains to be seen based on the policies that will be adopted both by the legislature and at the PUC. But I think the bigger picture, where when you talk about rooftop solar and about companies leaving the grid, is there's opportunities for individuals, whether they're small businesses, whether it's your home or a large company, to obtain their power in other manners, potentially at cheaper rates. And this isn't a phenomenon in Nevada. I mean, this is happening in other states. There's other states that have gone to a competitive market. They've worked. So I think there is, Andy's correct, there needs to be a tremendous amount of due diligence by the PUC on this. But the reality is there's opportunities, there's new technologies that are creating new opportunities for large and small businesses and for consumers.
Okay, so what then happens to Nevada Power? What do they end up looking like 5-10 years down the road?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
Anybody
I think they're
an
looking
answer.
At that. You know, certainly right. There's an opportunity. Someone's got to manage a grid, no matter mm-hmm. whether you're distributed in terms of your generation or not. You need a grid, and it needs to be sustainable. I'm not sure the power company wants to just be a manager of a grid, but there's nothing, I think, right now that would prevent them from being part of a competitive generation market, as well as a manager of a grid, but there's opportunities for them as well.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back with our pundits with more after this.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue on with our pundit show with Russell Rowe, Jesse Wadhams, and Andy McKay. Property tax. What's the discussion in the building at this point, Russell, about potentially lifting the property tax cap?
I think right now there's a lot of contemplation going on about how this ought to be handled in a thoughtful manner, whether this is something that ought to or should be addressed this session. So I think it remains to be seen right now whether or not we're going to see anything come out on property tax.
Andy, the counties and the cities are screaming they need the money. On the other hand, you've got Ben Kiekheffer on this program saying, hey, you know, this is over $1 billion that stayed with the taxpayers instead of going to local governments.
My opinion on property tax, for what it's worth, it's really nothing, is that I don't think anything's going to happen. And my basis for that is simple. You know, Senator Roberson drew the line in the sand, I believe it was day one, it may have even been pre-session. And the reality is you lift the cap, there's two-thirds. How they get to two-thirds, you can argue about the merits or not. Politically, I just don't see it happening.
But Jesse, we've seen lots of lines in the sand drawn in this session.
No,
you drive through Carson City and those lines are right across the road.
No, there's already a fair amount of lines being drawn, and it's week three. So, we've got a long way to go before the end of this. I mean, as to property tax, I kind of tend to agree with Andy. I think it's going to be difficult to get the Republicans to sign off on something, especially, on something so close to the individual. I mean, if and when they did a reform of property tax, that's hitting actual people that vote. And it's not like just saying we could pass it off to business. So
so you think the only tax that's really going to come out of this session is the marijuana tax?
Again, early session prognostication, probably, but it's a long ball game. And so, there will probably be some horses to be traded.
Mixed metaphors there. Give me a sense, Russell, this session versus last session. It seemed like 2 years ago, things were moving much faster right out of the gate. It seems this time, apart from the lines being drawn in the sand, that things are going a little bit slower. It's more like a normal session.
Yeah, I think that's true, Sam. You know, last session, there was obviously a very clear agenda. And when you have unified houses and with the governor all in the same party, it's a lot easier to do that. And I think the Republicans last session, it's fair to say, wanted to set an example of being able to show they can govern and do so in a very efficient way. I think it's fair to say they achieved that goal. And now this session, I'd love to hear Andy and Jesse's thoughts on it. It seems to be more partisan than last session, in the beginning at least. There seems to be a lot of legislation being introduced to make a point on issues. And I think that's caused some rancor in the building early. And it remain, like Jesse says, it's early, so it remains to be seen how that's going to impact the outcome.
I tend to agree with what Russell said. I think his assessment is pretty much accurate. Things are moving, though. I mean, second week in, they have the big hearing on the minimum wage bill and the assembly ends on Monday. In the Senate, and now certainly they haven't been moved, but they have heard some bills, some controversial ones at that. But it certainly is at a different pace than last session. I've told people I'm trying to figure out the vibe of the building, and I can't pin it down right now.
And is part of that because of term limits and the amount of new legislators?
Oh, I think that's probably a factor. As Russell alluded to, there certainly is some partisanship. There always is. And it's dramatically different than last session. And maybe it's just my memory is terrible. And this is probably more of the norm than not, quite frankly.
Well, I think both guys have touched on this. I think the early session seems to be a bit more partisan, which may be forcing entrenchment into the various caucuses a little early. It feels like the bills are rolling out a bit slower than normal. I don't know why that is. But I think and I think folks are trying to get their legs under them because we have a lot of new people, and that's going to be the theme of sessions going forward, is just a lot more new legislators learning on the job.
And leadership is always looking to the next job because they're not going to be here forever. So that's the way it is. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We look forward to having you all come back many times during the session. As you said, we have a long ways to go. We'll be right back.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance, custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada, and we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Sully Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
Among next week's guests from the Assembly, Chris Brooks, Lisa Krasna, and Irene Bustamante Adams. We'll see you then.